from KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For young people who are dealing with trauma or serious illness, sometimes art is just the right therapy. And why? Well, think about it. Art, for example, gives you control. Creating something is power, and imagine what that does for someone who feels their life is out of control. Art gives young people a way of expressing themselves when words don't work. And here's a big one. Because art happens in a realm of imagination, it opens the door to a story. Stories are critical. There's a production now playing at the Salt Lake Acting Company that began as the story told by a critically ill child. And we're talking about that story today, but also the place of art in giving perspective to kids who are thinking about the limitations in their lives. Join us after the news.
Stay connected with KUER throughout the day on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'll bring you stories from our local news team along with program updates and features from NPR, BBC, and other network providers. Get the scoop on upcoming events, meet your favorite public radio personalities, and find out what's happening at the station behind the scenes by following KUER on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We're building today's show around Nathan Glad from Taylorsville. Nathan is 9. And he has a rare bone disease, osteogenesis imperfecta. It's a condition that makes his bones incredibly fragile. It makes them brittle. That's the best word for it. And a few years ago, Nathan told this story to the artist and photographer Dallas Graham. It's a legend. It involves this mythical tiger up in a tree and a bird, a black bird named Blue, who can't fly. His bones are too brittle. Nathan's story was part of Dallas's art project, and the idea is to work with these critically ill kids to come up with stories, stories that Dallas helps bring to life as a book. Together, he and Nathan made this book. Well, now that book, called Climbing with Tigers, has become a play, which is now running at the Salt Lake Acting Company. And today in the program, we're talking about the story, about the production, and about the role of art as therapy. We'll begin with Dallas. Dallas is a photographer, an illustrator, a writer based here in Salt Lake City. He founded this project. It's called the Red Fred Project in 2013. He's partnered with 8 kids so far to create these books. And he's joining us here in the studio. And Dallas, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
Can you, if you go back and sort of pinpoint the moment when the idea came to you, can you do that?
Yeah, it was a very clarifying moment, and it's because a child died. Yeah. A friend of mine, whose son was 10 at the time, had this rare disease called Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and they were, in a beautiful but very raw way, sharing this with, you know, an audience. And this was called Mitchell's Journey. I'm sure a lot of the listeners knew about that, and I was affected like I think a lot of people were. And when this was happening, you know, this kind of idea crystallized, like, oh my goodness.
Wait, you were affected in what way? Like, what do I do?
This is terrible. Like, you're watching this happen, and you have friends that this happens to, you have family members that this happens to, and each time it happens, this real reality of like, how are they doing with this? And then what can I do?
Yeah.
Like, for reals, what can I genuinely do? And that's that moment of clarification. I say it was little Red Fred, this bird, you know, that I made. He sat on my shoulder and he's just like, Dallas, dude, we got to like make a book. Let's see if we can make a book with them, because his life is really limited in a very real way, but books aren't limited.
Yeah.
And so we asked and they said yes. And that was the initial moment. So you asked the moment. I was like, oh, yeah, there was a very defined moment.
Did Red Fred exist before that?
Yeah, Red Fred and his Jolly Troop existed before that. A few years before, I'd been writing short stories in the form of a blog, and they were silly stories, and they were sometimes sad stories. And
like, I'm imagining Red Fred is like this kind of this imaginary friend of yours in some way.
He's all real. He's totally right. Real. Oh, yeah.
But it was like a piece of art that you What, he was like a companion? I mean, what was Red Fred? How did you imagine him?
Yeah, Red Fred, he's this really delightful red bird who's made of a comma and exclamation marks.
Yeah.
And he means to pause and rejoice. And I'd been telling stories with him, via him, with him, through him, his voice. And I knew children, because I'd seen it for a few years. I knew children in general and adults liked this bird and this troop of birds and what they talked about. So I'd been exploring story writing, short story writing, and specifically short story, right? Like 12 images, you know, 12 short paragraphs. Like, what are we trying to say? So that was kind of the backbone as far as, you know, delving into story making with this jolly troop of birds, kind of like a cast,
yeah,
you know, that is trying to tell a story. So that when that moment came, when I started to see through my friend's eyes or wonder, you know, what, like, there's all of us standing around wondering what we can do for people we love, we care about.
You feel
we're
helpless.
We're not in that situation. And so what can we do? And gratefully, they said yes. Unfortunately, Mitchell passed away. And that day, March 2nd, 2013, was very significant to me because it was like the thunderbolt. It was like, oh, there are thousands and thousands of children alive now, living in critical conditions. And critical means a lot of things. But like, it's the reality that they are in a critical state. However, they have wonderful imaginations. They are not limited in how they think of things and they problem solve and in only the way that we know kids do and can. And so that's what was the germ of like, okay, we got to get this going and we got to go to 50 states and we've got to find 50 kids.
Yeah. And that's the idea.
Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit more about the sort of scope of the project in a second. But when you thought about what it would be, were you thinking that this is therapy, this is comfort, this is a way of them processing their, or did you think of it in really in those terms at first?
I appreciate that question because I think, I know that those have come to me, but genuinely and honestly, as best as I can portray, I'm really just, I was interested kind of in, what I think is a bigger human question, which is... And I ask all of my creatives, all these little kids this. But
is that what you call them, your creatives?
Yeah, our creatives.
That's great.
If you could write a book for the entire world to read, what would it be about? And that question positioned to anybody, regardless of your age, it makes people stop for a second and think. And so that was the driver. Of course, there's been a lot of interest about like, oh, is it therapeutic? Oh, is it helping them? Oh, it's helping me as a reader. Like, oh, I'm feeling, you know, but the real thing is to provide an environment and a position so that this incredible person who might be 7 or 11, but they've gone through a lot that I have not. So to get that perspective somehow, which somehow what they go through day in and day out, it does something to how they see things.
You know? So you don't really care if the story they tell is related to their condition.
No,
that doesn't really matter.
No, that doesn't matter. It like, sure it would, but like,
it
no.
It would if they picked it.
If they chose to. It's more about, here's your platform, buddy. So what is it? Like, what do you want to say? And then let's use these birds and like talk about it.
So you say, okay, find a story, like come up with a story,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then let's sit down and talk about your story.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's, it's a tiger, it's a bird, it's a this, it's a that. And you are working together. I mean, it seems like that's the really critical part too, is like,
right.
We are working on this together, dude.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, the intention, I tell people, I'm like, these are professional grade books, which means there is sophistication that has to happen, right? A story arc, but we talk about theme, we talk about the cast, like who's in it, because they choose who's in it. They get to make their own protagonist. They get to talk about, you know, the height, the very pinnacle, what's the most critical. And then at the end, you know, like, what are the two lessons? You have two chances, two lessons at the very end of the book that you want
them to kind of boil it down to a lesson. Yeah,
and they do. These kids arise. Like, they're like, okay, here are the, like, two lessons I want everyone to remember. So we have all the makings of what the, like, the bones and the sinew and the blood of a children's book, which all of us get. All of us kind of were raised with that, right? This art form.
Yeah.
We're going back to that. It's not like we're creating a new platform, but instead we are asking a child to make a children's book, you know? And I'm definitely there to help, you know, put my big arms around it and like make sure it reads well, it's edited, and like, you know, we it's a process though. It's not just the first thing out of the mouth.
Yeah.
So it's a mentor relationship that we have.
Because that's what professionals do. Is they edit. They work through each other.
They sure do.
Critique each other. Yeah.
We sure do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed too, in talking to you about this in the past is, and I know you want to be deeply sensitive about the sort of fragile nature of the experiences. But one of the things that I think you're not at all interested in is this idea that there's pity in any of these projects, or pity really. How do you describe the way you're thinking about that? Because you kind of hate the idea of pity, I think.
I know. Maybe I'm so like about that because I felt that before. I know what that is. I'm not so far removed, but once becoming involved with these children and their families and getting a small fraction, like how people view them, I just know. I was like, these kids do not want your pity.
Yeah.
That doesn't do anything for them.
Because why? They want to be seen as
they want to be
useful
seen
and
as
purposeful.
Equal. They want to be seen as productive. They want to be seen just like you and me for the merits or what we're trying to do or who we're trying to show up as. And they want that normalcy because a lot of the other normal stuff, like being at class every day, well, what if you can't because you just can't because you're sick? You have to have another treatment. Or what if you have to have massive surgeries that take you away from your social circle and then you can't get to work and produce because you have to lie in bed? Like, where does your value then come from? So, you know, they value the same things that you and I value. And a lot of that comes from problem solving in your head and your heart, how you show up for people. And so that pity, you know, I was like, oh, no, don't. I mean, let's recognize these kids for who they are, which is really wonderful, interesting problem solvers, super creative. Oh, my goodness, they're so creative. It's just all of us 30-something, 40-something people are trying to get back to that space of viewing the world as a child. And yet we can do that now with these kids now and create these stories with them now, you know.
What do you think all of this has taught you about art? You make art. You're in the process of trying to make art, trying to be an artist, photographer, writer, illustrator.
Yeah.
So has it given you any insights about the creative process?
This is like the $100,000 question.
Yeah, it is, right?
Truthfully, this is what I think. I think with working with these kids, I've drawn a diagram for myself before. It's got three sides. As I've been thinking about the nature of art and or where does it come from, on one side is pain. On another side is solitude.
Pain is crucial for art. Like you have to
A lot of time in art, there's pain.
Right.
And then a lot of times there's solitude. There's like a removal, aloneness. And then there's this like other side that's this unknown future. Who knows? And it's interesting when you go within those walls, this is where brilliant, creative, like just strong material is to create beauty. And I think great art has some of those components. You know, that's subjective to what I think, but viewing this and the kids and the project, but it goes back farther for me of like, oh no, I think if I view most great art, there's something pretty, like there's a big tiger on the other side of it. There's a big dragon. But that's the artist's job, is to create beauty in the middle of all those really harsh things. Mm.
There's a dragon. There's a tiger in Nathan's story, mm-hmm. and we're going to get to that. Mm-hmm. So stick around, will you?
Okay. Hello.
Dallas Graham is with us, creator of the Red Fred Project. The book he wrote with Nathan Glad is called Climbing with Tigers, which is now a play. We're going to be talking about that here in a few minutes. It runs through this Sunday, March 27th, at the Salt Lake Acting Company. You can get details on tickets at 801-363-7522, or we have the particulars on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the role of art to provide perspective and comfort for young people dealing with trauma or serious illness. We've been talking to a local artist, Dallas Graham, who's developed this art project where he partners with critically ill children all over the country. He partnered with Nathan Glad of Taylorsville, 9 years old these days. He first told the story when he was 7. Anyway, that story became a book, which became a play, which is now playing at the Salt Lake Acting Company. We'll give more details about that as we go along. Joining us now on the program, though, is Tracy Council, who is an art therapist and director of the Art Therapy Program for Children with Cancer at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital in Washington, D.C. She's also founder and program director of Tracy's Kids, which works with young cancer patients and their families. She's joining us today from a studio in Washington, D.C. And Tracy Council, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I guess let's begin by defining our terms. Because I think it's important to say art therapy, at least the way you practice it, it's not just working with kids and doing creative stuff. It's a specific practice. It's a particular profession. Would you say something about that?
Sure. Art therapy is a mental health profession in which clients, with the help of a trained art therapist, use art media, the creative process, and the artwork that they create to understand their feelings, resolve emotional conflicts, become more self-aware, manage anxiety and difficult behaviors, and just kind of generally gain insight into whatever kind of challenges they may face.
What do we know about the science of the way our brain reacts to art? Are we getting a sense of how our brain works with art?
Well, you know, it's really, really interesting. Because art therapy as a profession was founded, it grew out of the psychoanalytic movement, you know, like around the Second World War kind of era. And for a long time before that, many healing traditions have made use of art making as part of a healing process. So I think that intuitively, a lot of people have always thought that art had something to do with healing, and that the creative process can help people feel more able to meet their challenges. So what's happened in the last, 15, 20 years, with the development of what they call functional MRIs, they're able to kind of see what's going on inside people's brains when they're processing different kinds of stimuli, visual information, looking at pictures, listening to music, and various things. So we're getting a sense of kind of how the brain works and how memory works. And it seems that in that territory is where visual art comes into play.
So before it was just a hunch. Oh, gosh, art must be helpful. But now we know, yeah, it's helpful. Here's an MRI that can sort of pinpoint how and what it's doing to the brain.
Exactly.
Yeah. One of the things you've written is that art that is created in this process of art therapy provides a bridge between people and the outside world. What do you mean by that? What's that bridge?
Well, it's like this. It's like, really, we know each other and we're in relationship, but we don't really know exactly what's going on inside anybody else's head but our own. And so when you take that step to create a piece of artwork that makes visible what's going on inside you, and the witness, whoever that is, the art therapist or another person, can see what you've made. And it is like walking on a bridge. It's like we meet together on the bridge of your artwork, and then we can forge a clearer understanding.
One of the things that Dallas Graham was talking about earlier was, and he doesn't see what he does as traditional art therapy, but
right, it's not.
But what what's interesting is he says something that I think you would agree with, in that the idea of the in his case, these young people, Nathan in particular, in this particular story, mm-hmm. being in control. Like being right. the in charge of the creative process, that seems a really important part of art therapy.
It's huge. It's like step one. It's the first way that we can relate to these kids, because most of my work is with kids with cancer and other serious illnesses and their families. And the first thing that happens when you get a serious diagnosis is that you just feel like your whole world is out of control. You know, everything you thought. And in the case of children, very often, they feel like their parents should have been able to protect them from this, right? You know, a minute ago, I was just me, and now I have to do all these medical things and see all these doctors and do all these tests, and some of it's painful, and a lot of it's scary. So people tend to feel incredibly out of control, and honestly, kind of sad. It really takes a toll on your self-esteem. You know, like if you've ever had to take your pet to the vet and bring them home with one of those cones on, you know, they kind of like feel pitiful and sad. It's like that with people too. You know, we don't feel good about ourselves if there's something wrong with us. But the key, and what he's talking about with the Red Fred Project and what we tap into with art therapy, is that really it's only a little part of the person that's sick, right? If you've got cancer, okay, there's this one kind of cell in your body that's messing up right now, and it's making you sick. But all the rest of you is still you. And we're going to help you figure out how to deal with those challenges and how to fight back.
I like how you put it in one of the papers you wrote. You said allowing them to experience themselves as creators.
Yeah.
Like, and like, that's the ultimate control, creating something.
Right. Like, patient is a very passive word.
Yeah.
But creator is a very different thing.
Here's one thing you write. You say that in art therapy, you pick up this sensory information, and then you unconsciously bring it out mm-hmm. on paper. So talk about that, because it seems like this is another really important thing. So you talk about how children take in a tremendous amount of emotional information, and, mm-hmm. but they don't have the words really to express what they're feeling. To talk about that, that art then is the nonverbal way of letting them express something, I guess.
Exactly. Because, I mean, if you think about it, most people of any age wouldn't know how to express how they felt if you said, oh, you've got cancer. Yeah. You know, they would kind of be at a loss for words. But if you're a kid, you don't even have as many concepts and as many words to put around that. But you feel it just the same, because you're human. So one of the things that art therapy is really, really good at is starting from a place that people can get into without having to know how to explain what they're doing. You can just pick a color or pick a shape and pick a medium and just start. And you can just go from there and build what has meaning for you.
It seems like it kind of says what art is for all of us, and that is it's this really organic, really natural way of expressing ourselves that you don't have to connect to a word. You know, it doesn't have to make sense in that way. It makes sense in a more organic way almost.
Yeah, I think that's right, because, and in one of the things that about the nonverbal thing is that kids who are sick may experience things that are actually traumatic as part of either their illness or their treatment. And what we mean by traumatic is kind of a simple idea, in that something is so overwhelming that you just can't process it. You can't figure out what happened. You can't name it. You can't say, that's what happened to me, and it's over now. So it stays alive in your mind in terms of the sensory input. Right? A particular smell or a sight or a sound can unconsciously take you back to a very scary time. And what we can do with art therapy is collect those little sensory bits that don't make any sense. And then if you put them out on paper and integrate them into something, some kind of drawing or painting or thing, then you can see it and talk about it, and it's outside of you. And you can begin to make sense out of it and name it and get to the place where it's less scary, and you can move on.
Yeah, you write about that art, you can use art to embody that thing that might be too frightening, like a clay monster could be an expression of rage, for example. And so in this sense, that gives them a kind of an emotional safety. There's the scary thing. I can embody it. I can make it. And it's not as scary anymore, I suppose. Yeah?
Yeah, not only is it not as scary to them because they're in charge of it, but also, I mean, kids want to be good, right? Kids want to please the adults who are in charge of them. And they don't want to say how mad they are or how sad they are or how scared they are, because they know that the grown-ups in their life are already, you know, really upset about what they're going through. So they don't want to upset anybody. They want to pretend like they're okay. But art therapy can often give them a way to make things that show how they really feel. That's not overwhelming either to the child or to the audience that sees it.
I think this is my favorite part of the idea of art therapy, something you wrote about. And really important about art therapy is that it helps create a personal narrative. And you say that because art making happens within the realm of imagination, because it's sort of all bets are off. We can do whatever we want. We're in a realm of imagination now. And so you say that that opens the door to a story. Would you talk about that in the sense that it helps people remember events? It helps them talk about the importance of stories, because I really liked this part.
Oh, sure. I think stories are terrifically important. And the thing about it is, it's like the first thing you have to convince anybody to do in art therapy is to go with their imagination and to trust that. A lot of adults have been trained that their imagination is like the least important thing they know. But honestly, it's one of the most important things we have. And it's a very important tool for working out our lives and making our own stories. So a lot of times people will just kind of like start someplace in art therapy. And if you can help the person feel safe, like you're not judging it, there's no grades, you're not going to tell them it's wrong no matter what they do, and they don't have to make a perfect picture. They can just make it, and then we'll figure out what it means together. And that opens up the possibility of them creating their own story.
What happens when a young person, a child, is drawing this story or making a painting? And the parents are looking at it, and they're looking at it kind of as a Rorschach test, you know, like, this means depression, or this is telling me something. Do you have to tell the parents to kind of back off in that sense? Like, don't judge this thing. This is just their creation. It may not mean what you think it means.
Right. Just about every day we have to say that because, you know, parents are anxious, and they want their children to be happy, and they want, and especially if they're sick, they want to see the happy kid, right? And so, like, one of the things that happens probably several times a week is a little person will stand at our easel and paint. And little kids like to just experiment with the colors and just mix them together and see what they're going to get. And, of course, we as grown-ups know that if you mix all the colors up and you keep going, you're just going to kind of get this blackish, brownish blob. So they'll do that, but they think it's really interesting. And they're like little scientists because they actually don't know that every time they mix red and green and yellow that they're going to get brown. They haven't figured that. They try it like 25 times, you know. And so they end up with this gook. And the parent will turn to me and go, oh, my gosh, it's black. Does that mean they're depressed? And I'm like, no. That just means they're experimenting with color. And I encourage the parents to just watch the process and to not ask a lot of questions, because that's the other thing that parents will do. They'll say, okay, you need to make a house, make a square, make a triangle, put a rectangle in it, you know, and it's like, it's okay. You don't have to tell them what to do. They'll get there on their own. We just need to trust their creative process.
Let me ask you one more thing. Art therapy, you say, can help children face their limitations. I want to ask you about that, because this idea of limitation certainly comes up in Nathan Glad's story that he worked through with Dallas Graham. How so? How does it help them work with their limitations in the sense that they're mastering something, they're working through something, accomplishing something?
That's a big part of it, because they can really do some incredible stuff. The other thing, too, is that, you know, it's like there's a lot of stuff that a kid with a serious illness can't do, or they're not allowed to do for their own safety. They have to stay away from other kids. They have to be protected from germs. There's a whole bunch of crap they can't do. But there's a lot they can do, you know, and that's where we plug in, because we can find a way for a kid to make something. Sometimes we make amazing things with our kids in art therapy. A couple years ago, we had all the kids come together and make these giant big heads. They took cardboard boxes and they could make any character they wanted to out of a big old box. But the thing was, they were masks and they could wear them on their heads and dance around. And we actually made a music video out of it that was really funny. And it was such a kick for the kids, because they got to be big and they got to be out there and they got to just do it. And they did a really cool thing that a lot of their friends had never done.
That's Tracy Council, director of the Art Therapy Program for Children with Cancer at MedStar Georgetown University Hospital in Washington, D.C. She's also the program director for Tracy's Kids. There's a link to all of that on our website, radiowest.org. Tracy, thanks very much for taking the
time. Sure, thank you.
We are going to take another quick break, and we'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the role of art that can provide perspective and comfort and, in some cases, healing for young people who are dealing with trauma or serious illnesses. Dallas Graham is with us. He's a photographer, an illustrator, and a writer based here in Salt Lake City. He founded the Red Fred Project in 2013. And what he does is he partners with young people who have critical illnesses, and they make art. They create a book. He partnered with Nathan Glad, now 9 years old, when Nathan was seven, and wrote a book called Climbing with Tigers, which is now a play at the Salt Lake Acting Company, and we're talking about that today. I mentioned Dallas. Let me mention Robert Scott Smith, who is joining us, an actor and director, teaches theater at the University of Utah, is the artistic director of Flying Bobcat Theatrical Laboratory. He partnered with Red Fred to create the stage version of Climbing with Tigers. And Scott, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
So we need to get into the story first of all. So you're talking with Nathan, sweet little Nathan, about the story that he wants to tell. Dallas, what's the story that he comes up with? Because it seems like he had this legend in his mind already. Was it a story that he was already sort of cooking up?
I'm not quite sure.
Really?
I knew that after I worked with him, you know, I left some, you know, worksheets that his family, his mom and his dad went through with him. And then when I came back to say, hey, you've got to have something, you know, you got to have something. And they gave me this amazing 8.5 by 11 piece of paper that had the story more or less on it. And so I was not there during the story making. That was, you know, on his own with mom and dad in his bedroom at night, probably thinking so.
Give us a sense of what the story was. What in essence was the story? And we'll sort of work through how that then becomes transformed into a play. But
Right. Like,
what's the essence of the story that he comes up with?
The essence of the story is that there's this little blackbird named Blue, which was really cute and funny.
Yeah, I love
when
that.
He decided to do that, you know, the color and the name. But that he's alone and he's sitting on this tree branch, this front yard tree branch, and he can't leave the branch because his bones are brittle. They'll break. So he really can't fly. But he wants to go on like an adventure, and then he sees this, you know, really colorful skein of birds fly by. It's the Jolly Troop, and he meets them and they talk to him like, well, if you could do anything, what would you do? And he's like, well, I want to go to this really amazing place. It's in the Rosewood Forest. And supposedly there's this big mystical tiger there that can heal things. But to get there, we have to go through a few things like the dark barn, and there's a dragon in there, and the roses are really big too to get there. So it's just hard. And then the Jolly Troop says, well, we're going to help you get there. So that's the essence.
Isn't it funny how a 7-year-old kid comes up with Joseph Campbell, totally. The hero story?
Totally, right. Right. No, yeah. I mean, we know it, right? We all know it. We all know the story. Yeah.
What did that tell you? That, like, oh, man, this is embedded in us. This story is embedded in all of us.
It's there's no way to get around it or escape it. It's in us. And so there's something really comforting, right? We kind of know it. We relate to it. That's what I think. It's like, yeah, immediately I suddenly can relate to this kid, even though there's other ways I can't relate to him. I don't know what it's like to have my body break over 200 times. And no matter how much I try to imagine that, I really don't know that. However, I do know about stories that involve a protagonist that overcomes impossible odds. And Nathan does too. So, hey, we get that together. Yeah.
So, Scott, when did you first hear the story?
It's been I was familiar with the story when they launched the book. So I had been aware of Nathan and the story back when they launched the book, which has been about three years. So I was aware of it. I had no idea that this would be happening, that a play was in the works.
Really, that didn't come to you? Like, come on, man,
no,
do a play.
No, I actually wasn't thinking like, oh, that book would make such a great play. I just wasn't thinking in those terms because I was still formulating my next adventure as an actor was creating a theater company that was wanting to tell stories. So my history with Dallas, I've known Dallas for about 10 years, and I've been aware of the Jolly Troop since their creation. And so I have this great relationship with Dallas. He started seeing my work, what I was doing with Flying Bobcat, and he thought, you know what? Do you think you could take your magic and take this story and do your thing with it? And at that point, I was like, well, I don't really know what my thing is other than I'm an actor. I'm a storyteller. Let me see what I can do. But I am inspired by this connection and this idea. And lo and behold, here we are with this incredible, magical, wonderful, inspiring, heart-wrenching story that's come to life.
But that kind of is your thing, at least right now in this phase, in the sense that you're taking these stories and you're bringing them to life in another way. That seems like your thing right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, yeah. I was thinking about this morning. I was like, you know, I grew up in a family where storytelling was important. We laughed a lot. We told a lot of stories. But the one thing we didn't do was there was a lot of underlying, we couldn't talk emotionally about what was really on the surface. So when I found acting and discovered this art form that I can embody other characters to tell their story on an emotional level, it worked for me. So now I just have a way of, here we go. I'm going to tell a story in my creative way. You know, that's where the bobcat comes from.
Yeah.
That's the totem.
So how do you take the story, which is, I don't know, we'll put a link to it on our website, Nathan's book, Nathan's book. I'll call it Nathan's book, right?
Yeah. You will.
Simple, beautiful children's story. And how are you figuring you're going to transform that into a piece of theater?
Well, I just think visually. I'm an MTV generation child. I grew up with visuals, videos, imagery. That was just something that was in my mind. And the first thing I thought of was someone that I've known for a long time, Troy Deutsch, as a playwright. I love the way he views the world. I love his childlike approach, but I also love his sensibility of language and just how he writes so beautifully in this poetic, rhythmic style. And I said, I need him. He and I had a conversation for a couple of hours about what I was thinking, what I was inspired by. He knew my company and me. And I said, Troy, here's the story. Do you think we could do this visually, animation, projections, popping in and out?
Yeah.
There's a lot of technology and work being done. And he said, okay, let me see what I can do. And he came back with... it was unbelievable, this story that he came back. We have done some workshopping and made adjustments, but his first draft was incredible. And it's pretty much stayed the same.
It's hard to talk about on the radio because it's such a visual sort of thing that's going on. But we can say that in some ways, there's something happening two-dimensionally, and then there's obviously this third dimension. I mean, Blue as a character begins as a two-dimensional thing, and then he comes to life in the piece. Talk about that if you would, and then talk about this other element. He's in a cage.
Yeah.
He's caged.
Yeah.
Or at least that's part of his costume. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the first thing we wanted to stay true to was the book and the visuals within the book. That's Dallas's approach, and that's the gift, the photography with the graphic design and that layering. And that was the thing we first started with, was how do we still tell this story in that visual language that's already been created? But we're in a theater. We're not interested in making a movie or a animated short. We want to still have theatricality as part of it. So we want to have that live experience. So we thought, how do we go in and out of the world? I've seen a lot of theater companies that are playing with this realm, and how do we go 2D to 3D? And we thought, well, how do we do it? How can we do it here in Salt Lake? So that was our primary focus, because, you know, I wanted to be the storyteller. I wanted to come out. And because Troy gave us a narrator to help us on that journey, we were able to go back and forth from one to the other, and having little surprises of bringing Blue into a three-dimensional world. And then this costume designer who we brought on board helped to represent that, to say, I'm going to make a nod to it with structure and costume without really saying what it is, but to visually represent being caged.
Yeah.
You know, just simplicity. It's just a very simple cage that's built around him, you know, but it keeps just that. It's always in your back of your mind that that's part of it.
All right, Dallas, be honest. Were you worried that these guys were going to screw up Nathan's beautiful story? Like, how are you going to make this happen?
Now I have this chance to say it. 100%, I trusted them.
Yeah.
I've known Scott and his sensitivities, his sensibilities, his artistry, and Andra, who's his partner in this, and I what a real thrill is to hand this golden, you know, nugget to two dear friends, two colleagues, two artists, and just like, I totally trust you, and it is blowing my mind what these guys have done. It's absolutely extraordinary. And that in this art process, right, in this like hand holding that we're doing, is a real phenomenal thing to experience, to give something to someone else and to see them make something completely gorgeously original in their own respect, coming from the same taproot.
Yeah.
It's been great.
There's no way we're going to be able to convey the visual imagery here, but I want to play a moment here. This is at the beginning, and Scott, maybe you can help us set this up. This is the narrator talking. Essentially, right now, he's talking to us, the audience, and raising these questions. And this seems like a theme that you and Troy and Dallas must have worked out, this idea of, because he actually asks this, the narrator, what are your limitations? What is limiting you? Would you talk about that? Because this comes up in the play.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of, we start out in this two-dimensional world. So this narrator has this, you know, desire to come out and to share this story. So through his experience of coming from the 2D into the 3D, he's already taken that step of his limitations. He was limited by the world he existed, and he found a way to come into the three-dimensional world. So he then starts challenging the audience to think, well, where are you? Not physically, where are you? Where are you with your imagination? What limits you from making the next step? What's keeping you from making a choice because someone said it needs to be a square house with a little, you know, roof on the top?
Yeah.
No, it could be any kind of house you want it to be. And it doesn't even have to be a house. So we're looking at, how do we just expand that idea of our imagination and limitations? So that is really getting the audience, okay, here we go. We're going to go on this journey together. So let's not be limited in what you expect, because you're about to, it's the unexpected is about to happen. Go with us.
And where are you? Are you sitting there, or are you somewhere else? Are you flying, perhaps?
No.
Maybe somewhere far, far away?
No.
Or perhaps somewhere close? Where are you? And where are your thoughts? And what are you capable of?
I'm right here.
You. Sitting there now, you. What can you and your little human body do? Well, can you do this? There is a limit to what I can do. Even I have limits. We all have limits. And what are yours? Where do you draw the line? What do you stop yourself from doing even before you've tried or even begun?
Again, it's hard to sort of convey the visual component here. I love the interaction with the kids, though. Is that a challenge? It's got to be a challenge as an actor.
It's a gift, you know, I mean, in some fashion, because I don't know what to expect. And we've had such a great balance of, you know, we've had shows that were just for kids that come from schools, and they definitely like to talk, and I'm not sure where they'll go. So I always get a different bit of a feedback from them. And then if I have a mixture of, you know, adults and kids, then you get even a little bit more of an interesting play back and forth. But it's... definitely, it keeps me on my toes, and I have to be able to, you know, navigate and narrate that through so that we don't, it helping them understand the journey that they're about to go on. It's fun. I have a great time doing it. That's the first time I heard me doing it with them, so I was enjoying it very much listening to it.
You did pretty well. Yeah. I mean, it's, I have to say, you know, I guess it could hurt the concept, but if you have the, and you have the agility to be able to do it, you can actually make it work, because they are, those young voices are us personified, mm-hmm. in a reaction, you know?
Yeah.
I liked that.
They're just vocalizing the internal. They're just letting it out. Yeah.
Tell us, give me a sense of what it is that through Nathan, if you can imagine how he's thinking about this, and I won't ask you to speak for him, but what is it that Blue wants? I guess in some ways, sure, he wants to fly because his bones are brittle. But what is he really looking for? What is he really, I mean, that, I suppose that's the fantasy, but what is Nathan thinking about that he wants for Blue? What does Blue want?
That's a good question. We could read the story and just have, you know, like just glean from it there. I could think about what Rachel has told me, his mom, you know, she wrote me just an email the other day and said, basically, she's like, my boy is soaring. He is absolutely soaring. I could think about, what does Nathan want the day his third grade class pulled up, they packed a theater, and his entire class like roared their approval of him, which I think is a very different thing. To have a bunch of your peers roaring for you versus some adults who are happy for you. So that day, seeing Nathan see and watch, you know, 115, 20 children fill an auditorium and watch his book come to life is, I mean, I can only think he wants the same thing, which is that they come away changed, that they are inspired by something that he really wanted to say or share. I think that's what he wants. He wants us to enjoy the show.
Yeah.
He wants us to have like a really great time.
Yeah.
And then like maybe think a little differently when we exit this theater.
There's another theme. There are a couple of, that I sort of detected, and one of them was we don't need to give everything away about what happens, but I mean, Dallas, you mentioned the story of the mystical tiger, and he has to go through this great adventure. But well, Scott, one thing that I found really interesting is that the tiger is lonely. Like this idea of being alone, I really liked that. I thought that was really interesting. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, that to me is the thing I connect to the most in the story, is that idea of this mythical creature who's so, people talk of him as being terrifying, and he might eat you or gobble you up, but yet he's this lonely vegetarian living up in a tree
right.
That has this ability to inspire hope or, you know, in this story, heal. But I think that aloneness is what resonates to a lot of our audience. It's a very powerful thing.
I love, there's this moment I wanted to ask you about, because in the stage direction, this is how it reads. the two friends sit staring out over the forest canopy at the stars. Music plays. And it is a perfect moment in space and time. Would you guys talk about that moment? I just love that little bit of stage direction. It's almost like everything sort of stops for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's the gift of Troy Deutsch right there. That expresses everything. That's the story. That's the climax. That's the moment of here we are enjoying the simplistic nature of life and stars. It's simple. Oh, they just look up. Yeah. You know, it's not looking, it's up together. It's this beautiful moment, you know, and musically we've captured it. Visually, it's simple. And it's our Calvin and Hobbes moment.
Yeah.
Really.
No,
it really is.
Yeah. Dallas, one of the things you told us is that this is totally changing your life. In what way?
Every way. Professionally, socially, personally. It's making me rethink a lot of things. It's making me abandon certain things. It's making me reach for other things.
Making you a better artist, do you think?
I hope, in the respect of what is art and what, if I can do anything with it, I hope it is.
How's Nathan?
Nathan's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll probably see him tonight or tomorrow. He sees Scott and Austin with regularity too. So he's very happy and he wants you all to come see this show.
Well, here's how you do it. You can contact the Salt Lake Acting Company. There are details about that on our website. The play runs through this Sunday, March 27th. You don't have a lot of time. Tickets are still available. Again, go to our website, radiowest.org, for the particulars. Robert Scott Smith is Artistic Director of Flying Bobcat Theatrical Laboratory. Of course, partnered with Red Fred and the Salt Lake Acting Company to create this staged version of Climbing with Tigers. Scott, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Dallas Graham, creator of the Red Fred Project. The book he wrote with Nathan Glad is called Climbing with Tigers. We'll put a link to that on our website as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Doug.
We should mention that the Intermountain Healthcare Primary Children's Hospital has just hired an art therapist to create an art therapy program for the young patients. There's a link to that on our website also, to the Utah Art Therapy Association. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.